This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast.
And here we go, here we go.
Brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com. Broadcasting around the world.
Around the world.
We have the latest on KU recruiting, analysis, and what the coaches and players are saying behind the scenes. Here are your hosts, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers. Welcome into another edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We are back in the studio, fresh off the news where the Kansas football Jayhawks and Lance Leipold just picked up a commitment from Desert Edge High School standout in the state of Arizona, Mr. DeShawn Warner. We're going to hear from the standout defensive end later in the show, and you can hear him talk about why he chose to commit to the Kansas Jayhawks. We'll also bring you audio of offensive lineman Carter Lavrusky, another Arizona recruit who has also pledged to KU. We're going all football in this edition, taking a closer look at what is shaping up to be a very, very good recruiting class being put together by Lance Leipold and the rest of the Kansas football staff. Before we get into all that, I have to welcome in my partner, the publisher of Jayhawk Slant and the man on the Kansas football beat, John Kirby. John, how you doing this morning?
Randy, I'm just trying to find our tweets.
Yes. I just literally, just as we were about to get started, I was searching for stuff related to the EA Sports NCAA football video game. And tweets aren't available right now. Come back, you know, search later. I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
Oh yeah, what? You got hit, huh? Well, you know, I gotta tell you, it's funny. I didn't know what was going on. God, I think I got a text message from somebody. So you can imagine in our industry, right, that we work in, how many people rely on Twitter, because it's where the vast majority of news sits. So, I mean, it was like...
Yes.
It was like Armageddon yesterday, and it was funny listening to all the comments of people I talked to in our industry and just people that said, hey, I'll just get off Twitter. I'll go somewhere else. I won't pay for it. I finally told Shay, hey, I'm going to send you the Jayhawk Slant credit card. I'm not going to mess with this. Let's get the blue check back. We were verified. We had the blue check before everything changed, but, you know, I'm one of these guys. I'm not going to complain about anything. I'm just going to get it taken care of so we don't have to deal with it. But man, it was a hot topic, and it still is going into today.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I like you say, you didn't really know what was happening. Same with me. I at the end of the day yesterday, I pulled up Twitter for the first time on the day and see all this stuff about throttling and limits and stuff like that. I was like, what is this? And, you know, we all know that there's a ton of information on Twitter, but it's basically just, it is a hellscape, dark corner of the internet, whatever you want to call it. It's not a nice place. And so on top of it, it's becoming increasingly difficult to use. And it's just like, oh my God, why? It's bad enough. Why do you got to make it hard to use too?
Well, you know, what's crazy with me, Randy, is I learned yesterday after talking to people, I mean, there are KU coaches that can't view tweets, right? I mean, they can't. There's people in the KU administration, right?
I didn't even think about
that. Oh, yeah. I mean, these guys, you know, they hit their limits. And it's interesting. None of them are verified and paid. And, you know, I always wonder in something like that. I mean, does KU come back and say, listen, this is, you know, this is important for your guys' jobs and what you do to do this. We're gonna pay and do that. I don't know what they do, but I know it'll be interesting. I know. Like I said, I gave Shay the card. We're not gonna mess with it anymore. And I don't need headaches, man. I'm a pretty simple guy. Pay for it, do it. We need it. Let's roll. So hey, switching gears, man. What are you doing for the fourth?
You know, we don't have any crazy plans. I know, obviously, I'm going to enjoy the day off from work. Probably unpack a few more boxes after this move as we're getting our house kind of up and ready to sell. And so, you know, there's always something to get done with that. You know, we'll probably watch some fireworks somewhere. Nothing crazy. Just kind of it's weird with it being on a Tuesday. You know, it's really strange, especially, you know, my real job, I work in healthcare. And so that never stops, as you know. I mean, there are maybe four or five holidays that you get per year. And then with a role like your wife's, sometimes that doesn't even matter.
Yeah,
she's working the time.
There's no such thing as a holiday in that nursing and doctor profession.
Oh, no. And so it's for the rest of us that are kind of on, you know, like I'm on the marketing side, we have not too many more because of just trying to keep things kind of fair and equitable between the two sides of the building. So, you know, I'll enjoy the day off, but it's not like I'm going to be resting and getting to enjoy it. I'll be probably knee deep in boxes and packing paper and cleaning and stuff like that. So.
Moving is the worst. God, I remember that.
It sucks.
Yeah, I haven't done it for a while, but God, I still think when we moved in our house with two kids and everything, I think there's still boxes we haven't unpacked in 18 years.
It's crazy because like when we were kind of getting stuff out of the basement, we have a crawl space area where we store a lot of our Christmas decorations specifically. And I got back in the back of it and I found the boxes that we had folded up from when we moved in 13 years ago.
Oh, that's hilarious. Which,
the nice thing about it is I was like, okay, awesome. These are wardrobe boxes I don't have to go buy now. But it's still, the layer of dust on those boxes was pretty dang thick.
Well, glad you're all moved in.
Yes. Yeah. All set up in the office and ready to talk about this huge, huge recruiting news that we have that broke late yesterday, when Deshaun Warner picked KU. And, you know, I know you are a huge fan of this pickup. John, tell me what you think about this one and why this is such a significant commitment for Lance Leipold and his staff.
Well, Randy, for starters, you know, I've always talked about this, that one of the hot topics with KU fans every year, okay, when it comes to recruiting, it's not even quarterback sometimes. It's always D-line. I mean, KU fans, if you've ever followed the comments, it always comes back to what defensive tackles are they going to get? What defensive ends? And so Warner's film, I love it. I think his film is as good. Now here's where I get to pull a little seniority, okay? And I get to call roughshod over everybody because I've been doing this longer than anybody in the industry when it comes to covering Kansas football, okay? Kansas recruiting, that is.
Yes.
His film is as good off the edge as I've seen since I started doing this in 1998, 1999. So he's really good off the edge. He has different ways to get to the quarterback. I mean, he's got an outside speed move. He's got a move there. He goes outside, then he comes back inside. I mean, he's quick. He's got great feet. He's got some moves on film where he realizes he didn't get past a guy, and he'll just engage an O-lineman physically. There's a couple times where right tackles are there waiting for him with a fullback, and they're trying to chip him, and he still gets to the ball carrier, the quarterback. So he's got a lot of different ways he can do it, and his upside is out the roof because he is so athletic. There's one play on film. I think I put this on the board in my analysis on the breakdown. He lines up in the flat, and he's on a receiver, and this kid goes on a go route down the sideline. And, I mean, Warner runs step for step with this wide receiver, and he even flips his hips at the end to find the ball. And I was like, God, that's a 6'4", 220-pound defensive end doing that. So that was pretty impressive. There's another play on film that, you know, Randy, when you watch film, you always watch high school D linemen on screenplays, although you don't see a lot of screenplays anymore.
Uh-huh.
But they don't diagnose screenplays very well. There's a screenplay on there where, I mean, he starts running upfield, and his teammates keep going upfield, and he hits the brakes. He recognizes screen right away, stops, peels off, makes a nice play. He just does some things instinctually, and what he can do talent-wise, and Matt Gildersleeve is going to have a field day with this guy because he can add some weight and keep that athleticism. He plays with a great blend of speed and power in there. I just think he's really good off the edge. And I started to go back, and I was thinking to myself, how many guys have I watched on film that committed to Kansas that are as good as he is? And you know, a couple guys that came to mind, and I don't know that I would have ever said Dorrance Armstrong was going to sit there and be a guy in the NFL. But when I watched his film, I said, boy, he's raw, but he's talented. And Dorrance Armstrong and Warner have a little bit of the same build. Stephen Parker, a four-star D end, he was, I thought he was really good off the edge on film, but it would just, there's just not been many. So Randy, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get off subject. I got to grab this list here. So I want to make sure that I'm accurate when I bring this up, because this is up your alley. You're going to remember a lot of these names. So, you know, I got to thinking about what defensive ends and defensive tackles just in recent years have been guys who are really good off the edge that create, you know, that are dynamic pass rush guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year you had Lonnie Phelps. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then before that, you know, you had Dorns Armstrong. So mm-hmm. I went down, I started thinking, I'm going, you know, what defensive ends in recent memory, you know, Ron Warner came to mind. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know, was Ron Warner on the teams you played on, or were you after that?
He was not. Ronnie was his last year, the really big year before he went to the NFL, was my freshman year before I walked on. And I remember going to games and watching that 99 just come flying off the edge.
Okay, so I'm going to paint this picture, and historical KU football fans are going to love this topic here, okay? Because I printed this list off. Career sack leaders for Kansas. Okay, I'm going to go down this list. Algie Atkinson.
Now, there's a name I know.
Okay, Algie Atkinson, because he was there when you were there. But Algie really wasn't a defensive end.
He was an outside linebacker.
Yes, he was.
Just brought a lot in that 34.
Yes, he came off the edges in certain pass rush situations. Number two, Jake Laptad. Okay. Mangino era. I wouldn't have thought Jake was two, but he is. Then Ron Warner is third. Okay. And he only played two seasons, but he had the one great year where he had 14 and a half sacks. Okay. Uh-huh. Phil 40. Okay. Brandon Perkins, not a defensive end.
No.
Daniel Wise.
Yeah.
An inside guy. Dana Stubblefield, inside guy. Nate Dwyer, inside guy. Kyle Moore, little combination, but inside guy. And then Dorrance Armstrong. Those are your leading sack guys in the history of KU football. Okay. So, whoa. So look at some of the single season records for sacks. Ronnie Warner, Algie Atkinson, not a true D-end. Dana Stubblefield, not a true D-end. James Holt with 10 sacks in 2008. He was
not a true D-end.
He was the linebacker that, you know, Bill Young would bring in that zone blitz system he had.
What did he call him? He was the Bandit, I think?
The Bandit. Yeah, he was called the Bandit. Yeah. And then you keep going down, and there's Kyle Moore. There's Charlton Keith. Now, he was a legit D-end, okay? Mm-hmm. Then there's Brandon Perkins after that, who's your linebacker. Uh-huh. So, Randy, I'll tell you what. I it hit me why KU fans seem to migrate more to defensive line than any other position. Man, over years, I'm talking decades, there just have not been a lot of defensive ends that Kansas has had who create havoc that you know, can get to the quarterback that you see on some of these other teams. Guys will have them every year. But for whatever reason, KU is a program, and it's not pinned on any coach or any player. This is just going back years and years and years of guys who the defensive end spot just hasn't produced. So I really think that, you know, when I look back over time, I think Deshaun Warner is as good as anybody I've seen. So sorry to get off the subject there, but I knew that's something that you would remember.
And absolutely.
It's something I stumbled on yesterday because I started to go back over time thinking about defensive ends, and I got on this list. So I'm sure some of the longtime KU football followers will remember some of those names and kind of the struggles they've had at defensive end.
Well, and it's not really, you say it's kind of off the subject. No, that's fantastic context for why this position, you know, why fans, like I say, why they look at it so closely. But also it speaks to the struggles this program has had, because if you look, every one of those guys that you mentioned, there were a lot of times there, you might have one or two together. Like, you know, you had Dorrance and Daniel Wise at the same time. You had Algie Atkinson and Nate Dwyer at the same time. But then there were gaps between those two and the next one. It has been so long since they've been able to, for a consistent period of time, say, we can get pressure with our defensive line without having to bring extra guys. And that's what a guy like Deshaun Warner can bring. While you were talking, I went ahead and I watched his huddle highlights again. That screenplay that you talk about is fun to watch. You can almost see the wheels turning in his head And he literally, like you said, he slams on the brakes and makes the play on the guy before he even really gets that close to the line of scrimmage. I saw the one that you mentioned with him flipping his hips. What I like about him is he is a long athletic frame, like you talked about, but he has great athleticism. He's got great change of direction. His lateral quickness is good. Maybe my favorite part, though, he closes to the football like a bat out of hell. Once he decides where he's going, once he gets close, he closes that gap faster than anybody else in the frame. That's what made him flash to me. And I am excited, super excited to watch him play. Speaking of Deshaun Warner is our special guest on this edition of the Inside Slant Podcast. I'm going to turn it over to the studio line where John is going to bring him in right now.
We are joined by Deshaun Warner from Desert Edge High School, who just gave the Jayhawks his verbal commitment. DJ, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Well, I want to make sure, first of all, that you're not injured or anything, because after you announced, it looked like it was Andre and maybe John came up and tackled you.
Yeah, that's pretty much that.
Did you make it out of that okay?
Yeah, I made it out. I made it out healthy for sure.
All right, so I have to ask you this. When I saw their reaction and they came up and hugged you and threw you against the wall almost, did they know you were going to KU, or did they just find out when everybody else did?
No, actually the only people that knew were my two head coaches, my defensive coach, Coach Leipold, Coach Peterson, and Coach O. I kept it in my mom. I kept it a secret pretty much for everybody. John and Jerry are actually pretty scared because I got Chris the ball to UW last night. So they're pretty scared, but yeah.
Oh, I know. Trust me, that conversation came up on our message board because the Kansas fans saw somebody predict you to there and it got everybody worried. So break it down. Yeah. Tell me about your decision. How did you know KU was the place for you over schools like Texas, Washington, Oregon State?
So I kind of already had the idea that I was going to end up there. But then after seeing all these visits, I noticed like it was KU by a mile, but I seen the visits and then I really got to think about it and I really got to appreciate how much the coaches do for me at KU, how much they love me, how much, and how important I am to them. So as soon as I landed, I felt that and I got to really feel firsthand on what it's like to be a part of the Jayhawk family.
When you finally told Coach Peterson, Coach Leipold, and the guys on staff that you wanted to be a Jayhawk, what was their reaction like?
Man, they were excited because actually Coach Leipold had asked me, so when do I plan on committing to school? He was asking me that during the season, and I let him know I'm a committed coach. They started jumping on me, and they really got to show that they were truly happy.
All right, Jordan Peterson just started recruiting the Phoenix area, the state of Arizona. It was last year, last April or May, when he first came down starting recruiting. And obviously, he's done a great job at Desert Edge. Just talk about getting to know him and the relationship he's built. Obviously, your co-head coaches, Marcus and Mark Carter. I mean, he's obviously done a pretty good job at that school. What is it that you've noticed from him?
Yeah, I've noticed that he's a genuine person. Like, he genuinely cares. He's always going to be honest with you. He's always going to tell you you need to work on what you do great. And I can tell his relationship is built off of honesty, love, and trust. Man, I could trust that guy in my life.
You know, when you went on your visit, talk about some of the things that stood out to you. Because I know you hadn't been there, but you'd heard things from Andre and John, but you got a chance to see it for yourself.
Yeah, things that stood out the most is probably how much love you feel in the town, how close the players get along, the environment, the family environment. Everybody truly every day wants to get better, no matter whether that's being a person or whether that's on the football field, and everybody's truly bought into you.
Now, Kenny Logan was your host, right?
Yes.
Yeah, talk about being around Kenny and being around the players, and what did you take from them?
It was great. Kenny took me under his wing those 2 days that I was out there, and he showed me what it's like as a player. And I told him, I was like, straight up, what made you stay through the transitioning of the new coaches and the old coaches? He said as soon as he met those new coaches, he knew that things were going to be different, things were going to be better. So, yeah.
All right, so I have to ask you this, too. Right before you put the KU hat on, you paused for a second like you weren't sure, then you put it on. Did you plan that?
Yeah, I planned it. I wanted to scare everybody a little bit.
Well, I think you succeeded. Yeah. You know, talk about what it means to be going to KU. You got two of your friends, teammates going there with you. What's that like to go there and have those two guys take that journey with you?
I mean, it's everything. I feel like as recruits and as athletes, one of the things that we look for in the school is the family environment. And what more of a family environment do you have than playing with the guys that you played 4 years? And Andre is literally my cousin, so that literally breaks the meter on the family part.
Yeah, and my last question for you is, how does this feel? I mean, this was a crazy June. I mean, you were getting on planes. You were going to all these visits. How does this feel to have the decision made and have everything passed you?
It's definitely surreal. I'm kind of still soaking everything up. I definitely feel blessed. Once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I'll never forget this. Yeah.
DJ, that is great stuff. I really appreciate you joining us here, and I know the Kansas fans, you made a lot of people's weekends here heading into the 4th of July, and hey, congratulations on your decision, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, DJ, thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Say it again?
I said thank you very much. I had to stop the recording, but yeah, thank you very much, man. Enjoy the weekend. I definitely look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
You know, Kirby, when I hear Deshaun talk, and I listen to that interview, there are a lot of things that really stand out from him. But specifically, hearing him say he can trust Jordan Peterson with his life, that's really strong for anybody, let alone a teenage kid in high school.
Yeah, listen, what Jordan Peterson done there is impressive. I mean, he went down there. What are we in? Beginning of July, think about this. A year ago, 2 months, Jordan Peterson got off a plane and landed in Phoenix. It was the first time KU stepped foot in the state to start recruiting.
I remember you posting on the board about it. Be like, hey, Jordan Peterson in Arizona.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, okay, boy, Arizona, that's going to be a tough place to recruit. I mean, that's Pac-12 country. I mean, how are you going to get good guys out of there? And there is some talent, you know. Somebody posted on the board or something, you know, the guys that are down there. I mean, I want to say Kamara is rated the 20th guy in Arizona. He'd be top five, top six in Kansas. So
easily,
you know, Peterson's gone down there and he's built a really good bond and relationships. He went to Scottsdale and got Lavrusky. But, you know, I got to tell you, Randy, too, Jordan Peterson gets a lot of credit, but there's also been help with the staff, too. I mean, Peterson goes down, he finds the guys, he builds the relationships, then he gets them going. Then he gets them going with the position guys. So you look at Kamara, okay? He's going to be a linebacker. Chris Simpson got involved there. You look at DJ Warner. Taiwo Onotolo got involved there. You look at Lavrusky, the offensive lineman. Scott Fuchs got involved there. So, you know, Jordan Peterson's done a great job getting a new area started, and I don't think you're going to see KU pull out of there anytime soon. But there's also some credit to just teamwork of the staff.
Now, I know there's a lot of work left to do, and there's a long time till National Signing Day, but there are still a few key positions that are left on the board. Talk about who is left, who you're tracking, and who this staff might have the best shot at landing going forward.
Yeah, you know, there's still a good group of guys that they've had official visits that haven't officially announced. I don't know that they sit in good shape with some of them, but there are still some key guys on the board that would make this class about as good as it could possibly be. The first one I'm going to start off with is Dakius Brinkley, a four-star defensive end from Texas. I just don't know where his timeline is going to be right now. He and I exchanged some messages the other night, and he just said, hey, I want to be patient. The longer this goes, it worries me with him, okay? The shorter it goes, if he decides that I'm going to make a commitment and I know where I'm going to go, I like the Jayhawks' chances here. Again, Jordan Peterson is on him. Onotolu has been in there helping out. You know, he told me he wants to be patient, but we'll see. I mean, now you've got DJ Warner committed, okay? Now, Dakius Brinkley knows there's one spot left for a defensive end. And mm-hmm. the next guy who chooses Kansas, that's it. They're not taking any more defensive ends. So I have a feel, Randy, and this is just my gut feel. If he decides to go early or decides to get this done, I like KU in this. I mean, we're talking about a four-star DN that got a lot of play. If he wants to push this thing out and get it into September and October, then it worries me because now you're just taking so much distance between his last official visit and then where he is now. Number two, Nick Marsh, four-star wide receiver from Michigan. I think all the KU fans listening to this obviously, you know, are going to know about Nick Marsh. Very difficult to predict. I mean, it's KU, Penn State, Michigan State, and Pitt. I think there's going to be some money thrown around in NIL. I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of people going after him. I know he likes Chris Simpson. I know he likes Terry Samuel. You've got Isaiah Marshall working on him, Jalen Todd working on him, guys that play 7-on-7 with him that are committed to KU. Nick Marsh is playing this thing very close to the vest. We're going to know here in about a week where he's going because he is going to announce it. The next guy that I think would be the third guy that I still think are the most true on the board guys of everybody left is Tyler Simmons, a defensive lineman from Florida. We've talked about his dad was a first round draft pick out of North Carolina, was a very good football player. He's been through the recruiting. He's helped his son. Tyler Simmons is a very smart kid. He's got, you know, Yale, Harvard, Columbia, a lot of these schools that are on him. I think it's down to KU, Northwestern, and Virginia. You know, the thing that I'm perplexed with Simmons is he's talking about doing a late July visit. This would be an unofficial visit because official visits are shut down. So he hasn't told me what this school is, but there's a mystery school that intrigues him. And if he takes that late July unofficial visit to somewhere, I don't know how to read this. I really do think Kansas could be a slight leader, or it's at least is going to be KU and Virginia possibly at the top. We've just got to figure out where this July visit's going to be. And, you know, I noted that there's some guys that are still on the board that haven't announced publicly. Chima Chineka, I think he's going to go to Iowa. I think Joseph Anderson's going to go to Iowa. I think Xavier Porter's going to end up at Louisville. I think David Abajian, offensive lineman out of California, is going to end up at Oregon State. Oh, who else is? Elias Williams. You know, I don't know where he's going to go, honestly. I guess he's somebody that's still on the board technically. He's just been very hard to read. So, you know, listen, this has been an amazing group of official visitors. Go down and look at some of the offer list of some of these guys that visited in June. And boy, if they can close out with one or two of those guys that I mentioned, we are talking about a great summer class.
This class is starting to wind down, and last I checked, KU is currently fifth in the league for the class of 2024. As things stand right now, you know, you talk about how it could be. What about right this minute? What's your take on this class as we speak this morning?
Yeah, you know, Randy, it is fifth. You're right on that. And, you know, I think it was a couple weeks ago I posted they were third. So, you know, the problem when I posted that a couple weeks ago or a week or so ago, that was before Texas started to eat. So Texas got it going here in the last 7 days. I think Texas went from like second to the last or last in the league recruiting standings all the way to first in a matter of like 5 days. So it just shows you how good Texas can recruit in Oklahoma when those guys get going. And soon we're going to start seeing the additions of Cincinnati, Houston, Central Florida, BYU. They're going to start getting figured in the rankings as well. But listen, I posted this on the board, Randy. If I would have told people back in April, Kansas is going to have the fifth best class when the dust settles coming out of June here. And those can still change here or there. I mean, Kansas gets a couple or somebody else. But if you're sitting in the middle of the pack in the Big 12, especially compared to where Kansas has been lately, I guarantee you every Kansas football fan who follows recruiting would have absolutely taken that. If they would have said, if we can fast forward right now to July, would you take being fifth in the Big 12 in recruiting in the rankings? People would have said, absolutely.
Oh, they'd have jumped at the opportunity. There's no question about that at all. That it's we've kind of gotten a little bit spoiled with the pace that they've brought in these commitments and where they're recruiting at. And you know, to be in a position now where, like you talked about, you just mentioned a lot of guys that are, in your opinion, that are going elsewhere and are likely not coming to Lawrence. And for some people, I know I've seen it on the boards, for whatever reason, I don't know if people are new here or what, are just like, wow, it's going to suck to go over for July, or, you know, we're going to miss out on all these guys and we're going to be left with nothing. What are we going to do? What are we going to do is we're going to fill up early. I mean, that's the amazing thing about this. You know, I'm still just stunned. And I know you and I have talked about it. We're not going to have anything to talk about for the next several months when it comes to recruiting. You know, be honest with me here. Did you expect the kind of success that this staff has had, even coming off the first bowl game in quite a while, the progress that they made on the field this past season, College Game Day, all that? Did you expect this kind of success, and what has really stood out to you over the last few months as this class has come together?
Yeah, I didn't expect this. You know, I expected some bump. Like you said, there was ESPN Game Day. There were sold-out crowds. You had a bowl game. Lance Leipold's name was everywhere. And, uh-huh. You know, I know Kansas fans were uneasy last year. In December, when his name was getting thrown around for Nebraska and Wisconsin. But in the end, I've always joked about this, sometimes that helps, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Because now people out there get the image that other schools wanted your head coach. So just the publicity that Leipold got last year, and then the fact that, and the publicity that the Kansas fans got to see with game day and that being televised all over the country. I mean, that's still paying off. That is probably one of the best infomercials Kansas has ever had for their program.
No doubt.
You know, Randy, I'm not surprised, but I think that this staff mainly had a reputation as good technicians, good coaches, guys that can put together good schemes. I mean, I think when he came from Buffalo, a lot of the core guys came with him. Then he filled in with some guys from outside his staff. And I think the reputation that Lance Leipold and his staff have always had, the stigma is they're really good coaches. They're gonna get down to film. They're going to find ways to, you know, put together schemes on Saturday and win games. But they've never had that reputation as saying, these guys are really good recruiters. Well, I think coming out now as we head into July, I think a lot of that's changed. I think the perception of that's changed, because now you start to sit here and say, boy, they're doing a great job on the recruiting trail. And I think leading into it, they just needed something to sell. In the beginning, they didn't have a lot to sell. They did it based off, you know, finding guys that fit their program, finding guys that fit their schemes, that finding the right kids. Well, now you add in the success that they had last year, the turning of the program, the culture that they've built. Now they have more ammunition to go out there and maybe start targeting a higher level of recruit, which you've seen. So, and then obviously, you know, hey, if there's a surprise, probably it's what they've been able to do in Arizona, Jordan Peterson and the other guys on the staff going to a new state and pulling four commitments from kids that I think are all really good football players.
You mentioned the success there in Arizona. One of the recent commits was offensive lineman Carter Lavrusky from Scottsdale. Let's hear from Carter. Here's some audio with him talking about his decision to commit to KU.
What stood out on the visit? Tell me what you liked about the visit.
I mean, I really liked the culture of the team. That was one of the biggest things for me when making my decision, and I feel like I could really fit in there with teammates and coaches. And then also the offensive scheme that Kansas runs, I feel like that really fits my mold as a player. They run a lot of outside zone, and they ask for tall athletic tackles to get on the outside perimeter. That's, in my opinion, one of my best parts about my game.
You know, when you were here on the visit, talk about being around Coach Fuchs and just what you took from him.
I mean, he just seems like a really honest person. He told me, he was like, I'm always going to tell you the truth. He was like, sometimes truth sucks. He's like, but I would never lie to you. He seems like a super down-to-earth person to me. He just seems like someone that you can like really trust.
And then, you know, obviously Coach Peterson recruits that area and kind of got things started going with you. Just talk about Coach Peterson and what it was like getting to know him.
Coach Peterson, what a guy. When I first walked in off of getting, like, they picked me up from the airport, right? And then we walked into a restaurant, pretty sure it was called Jefferson's. It's on Mass Street.
Oh, yeah. All the KU fans and the donors will know about Jefferson's.
Yep. As soon as I walked in there, he was one of the first people to come up to me, shake my hand, give me a hug, tell me how excited he was. And he's really made me feel welcome there.
You know, I want to shift over to hanging out with the players. Just, you know, who was your player host and what kind of vibe did you get hanging around the players?
My player host was Bryce, and it's Cable Boo. Sorry. But then we kind of just like sat around, talked some football. I met a bunch of other O linemen, D linemen, and they all just seemed like they were super close. Like, we just went on talking for a couple hours, and it went by super fast, and we were all just going, and we all felt like super close to each other. I could tell it was really a good family environment.
All right, so I have to ask you this question. When you committed, tell me the scene, and then what was everybody's reaction like when you committed?
So we were at Coach's house. There was a pool party, and then he brought us, kind of like a beach house, like a different separate part. It's like next to his pool. And we were having a meeting there with me and my parents. And then I said that I wanted to commit and be a Jayhawk. He's like, all right, let's go tell the guys right now. So I walked out there. Everyone was outside by the pool. I announced it. We all started cheering. They told me to jump in the pool. And then I did a backflip into the pool.
That's good. Tell me, you know, what's it feel like, Carter? I know you had some other offers come in the beginning of the month and things like that, but what's it feel like to be committed and just kind of know where you're going?
Oh, I mean, it feels great. I'm definitely super happy with my decision. It's also just a relief. Just like, it's done. I can just focus on myself, focus on football, and not have to worry about all this recruiting and everything like that.
Great stuff there from Lavrusky. And if you have ever wanted to see a 6'6", 280-pound offensive lineman do a backflip after committing to your program, you have to look at the video that just went up on the site. That'll do it for this edition of the Inside Slant podcast. We went all recruiting, talking about the impact of the DeShaun Warner decision. Kirby and I gave you everything on what went into his picking Kansas, as well as a quick interview with Carter Lavrusky talking about his decision to be a Jayhawk, looking more at the impact of the Kansas recruiting efforts in Arizona. For my man, John Kirby, I'm Randy Withers. You've been listening to the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. Have a happy 4th of July. We'll talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.